Welcome to the Angletopia podcast, where we explore British travel, history, and culture, and I'm your host, Jonathan Thomas. Few places in England carry the weight of literary history more than a modest Georgian parsonage in a small Yorkshire village does. The Bronte Parsonage Museum in Haworth is home to the world's largest collection of Bronte artifacts, and it's the place where three of literature's most extraordinary sisters lived, wrote, and changed the world forever. Today, I'm joined by two members of the museum's team, Mia, the museum's digital engagement officer, and Sam, the museum's program officer. And they're both co-hosts of a podcast called Behind the Glass, a Parsonage podcast, the museum's own brilliant show that takes a close look at the most extraordinary items in the Bronte collection. And we're talking at a remarkable moment because right now, thanks to Emerald Fennell's new big screen adaptation of Wuthering Heights, starring Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi, the Brontes are having a bigger cultural moment than they've had in years. There's an enormous amount of discourse swirling around this film about casting, about faithfulness to the novel, and what the Brontes mean for modern audiences. And it's a fascinating moment to be talking to people who live and breathe this world every day. So welcome to the Angletopia podcast, Mia and Sam.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Thanks for being on the podcast. I've been very excited about this because with all the discourse around Wuthering Heights, I thought we could have a really interesting discussion. So I'll dive right into the questions. So for American listeners who may not have visited Haworth before, can you paint a picture of what the Bronte Parsonage Museum is, where it is, and what makes it such a special place to visit?
We're in Haworth, which is in Yorkshire in the UK. We're kind of north in the UK, near Manchester and Bradford. And Haworth itself is a small village that feels very much set in the Victorian era's cobbled streets and old buildings. And at the top of the hill, you have the parsonage where the Bronte family lived. The museum itself is kind of set in the period that the Brontes lived in, and the house is dressed as it would have been when the Brontes lived there, so it's as they would have known it. I don't know if you want to add anything, Sam.
Yeah, it's just a very it's a very atmospheric place, so you feel like when you go there you're stepping into one of the novels, which is really nice, especially if you just go up behind the parsonage. You've got the moorlands. I think that's, you know, there's the ruin of Topwithens up there, which is supposed to be the influence of Wuthering Heights, so you feel like you can really step into the pages of the book. But Haworth hasn't really changed that much over the last 150 years, so it's very easy to imagine the Brontes walking those streets and seeing those buildings, and it's just it's a beautiful village.
Lovely. So Mia, tell us a little bit about your role as the digital engagement officer. What does that look like day to day at a museum like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all say that our jobs kind of are different every day. But my main role is I look after the social media accounts for the museum. So it's, yeah, making digital content for that. Also our website and, of course, the podcast that me and Sam do as well, and other digital projects. But it's been an especially exciting time, like leading up to the film and creating digital content that is in relation to it and has got everyone talking. So it's been fun.
Sam, what's your role at the museum, and how did you both end up becoming the voices behind this podcast?
So I'm the program officer. So I do events, and we'll be looking into contemporary arts as well. So that's a big part of the museum too. So I'll be putting events on, like we do Thursday talks, we do workshops. This year we've got a live music event, which is very exciting as well. So it's trying to think up new and creative ways of trying to bring new people to the parsonage, as well as giving something for existing fans of the Brontes. And then how I got into the podcast was an accident, because so there were two people who were going to do the podcast, and then one of them ended up having to leave just before they started the first episode, and I was going to be the guest on it. So we ended up just swapping, and so I was hosting along with Sassy, who did the first series, so that's how I got into it. But it's been great, and we love doing it.
So the museum holds the world's largest collection of Bronte items. What kinds of objects are in the collection, and what surprises Mrs. Vos when they see them in person? And I'm not sure which of you the question is good for, so just feel free to answer and we can go back and forth.
Yeah. So the museum has kind of everything. It's got a lot of their handwritten manuscripts, like poetry and letters and first editions of their novels. But we also have the everyday household items like furniture and their writing desks that they wrote at, and like everything to teaspoons. So we've got everything. We've got, you know, a lot of their stuff. I think what usually surprises visitors the most is the tiny little books that they made when they were children, and they kind of made them for their toy soldiers, and they kind of documented their own imaginary worlds and created these tiny mini magazines, and the writing in them is incredibly small that it always surprises people.
Interesting.
I think as well it's that that thing that when people come in, they don't always realize that everything is genuine. Well, pretty much everything that you see is Bronte furniture as well. So, well, some museums, they'll set dress it to look a certain time period. But we're quite fortunate that we've got a lot of items that actually belong to the Brontes as well, which is
interesting. So what's it like working somewhere so steeped in history? I mean, does the weight of it ever hit you? Do either of you have a favorite object in the collection?
We burst out crying all the time. actually, Mia, I'll let you go first with this one.
Yeah, I think sometimes it does hit you, especially when you, I think at times when so many people are talking about the Brontes at the minute with the new film coming out, that you're seeing Emily's quotes everywhere and, you know, the title of the film and the posters all around. And I think there's really moments where you think, oh gosh, this all started here where I work and I'm there every day. It's kind of those moments where it kind of brings you back and you kind of have those realizations, because it's very easy for it all to become just normal for us. But when you have those moments where you're like, gosh, they actually wrote like Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights in this room, like on this writing desk, it's very special. Yeah, I feel very lucky. I think the writing desks are some of my favorite objects because they contain all the same materials that the Brontes left them. So like, you know, a lot of the objects inside the writing desks, it's just as it was when they died. Everything's been preserved exactly. So they're quite special items, I think.
Sam, what's your favorite object?
I want to say the writing desk as well, but I want to say something different to be different from you. So I'm going to say the dining room table, actually, basically anything that's in the dining room, because I think there's so much imagery with that room of them walking around the tables, reciting what they wrote, it's believed that Emily died on the sofa as well. And I think that's very moving. I think that's something people find very moving when they come in. And I think it kind of hits you as well when you have people, especially when people have come from abroad or come really far, because Haworth isn't easy to get to, even if you live in the UK. So it's like, if you've come from abroad and you've come to see that room or the house, I think that's very moving. And you do get people who come and they'll get very emotional. And I think that's when you suddenly, it just gives you a little reminder of where you're working. And I think that's really grounding. And yeah, like what Mia said, I think seeing all the promo for the new film everywhere, it's just been great to see. And it's nice to think that it all just came from this little house in their little village in Yorkshire.
So the Behind the Glass podcast, tell us about that. The format is wonderfully unique. Guests choose an object from the collection and then that anchors the whole conversation. How did the concept come about?
Yeah, I think the idea is that with museums, we have so many objects and you can only ever have so many on display at one time, either for conservation reasons or just space. And so the podcast is a great way to kind of highlight specific items that maybe you won't see, that maybe they're never on display, maybe they're rarely on display. And it just adds a new lens onto some of them. You kind of really get to deep dive into one specific object and maybe learn something new, see it in a new light. So yeah, it's been fascinating too, because they're objects that we don't always know a lot about either until someone chooses it and then we get to do more research into it. So it's very fun.
Yeah, it's like a treasure hunt. So you're now well into your third series of the podcast. What have been some of the most memorable episodes or objects to either of you?
I think for me, well, all the episodes have been really good, and they're always great fun. I think one that really stands out was when we had Holly Ringland on, who she wrote the Lost Flowers of Alice Hart, and she was just so, you could tell she was just so excited to be there. It's kind of like what I was saying about when visitors come from abroad or come from far away. So she lives in Australia and she came. And I think it just kind of radiated off her, and she was so enthusiastic and passionate and really kind of inspired you to want to go out and be creative and follow your creative ambition, which I think was really nice. And I think that's happened on so many episodes. And I think that's one of the loveliest things about it, is being able to meet all these different people from different backgrounds and be inspired by them.
What about you, Mia?
I agree with Sam, but also a great episode we did, we looked at the tea cozy that Charlotte made. And it seems like a very unassuming item. It's very everyday. And I guess you wouldn't think it was maybe that special in terms of compared to some of the others. But it was really interesting because we had Kit Hayam on the podcast and we looked at the gendered history. And so we were looking at the materials that the tea cozy was made from and who was making those and where they'd come from. And it was a really deep dive into it that was very interesting to learn more about.
So what's the response been like from listeners? Are you reaching people who are already deep Bronte fans, or are you bringing new people in?
Do you want to go, Sam?
Oh, I'll let you answer. Well, I was just going to say something that stood out, because I think Mia sees more of kind of the stats than I do. One thing that stood out was when we were, I think actually I was stood with you, Mia, and we were in the foyer sorting something out, and someone came over and they were like, "Do you do the podcast?" And we were like, "Yeah, we do." And they're like, "We recognize your voices." And they had come from America, and it just so happened that our colleague Ramla, who was also on the podcast, was nearby, and so they were just so excited to meet them. And they said that they had come to the passage because of the podcast, and that was really nice to hear. Because again, it's just showing that it's reaching a different audience, and it's hopefully making it accessible to people who maybe didn't think that they would be interested in that kind of history. It just kind of gives another opportunity for people to kind of access the museum, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixture of people who are big Bronte fans and then also new audiences. And a lot of our listeners are overseas. So I think for people who can't always visit the parsonage in person, it's great to still be able to engage with us in a different way.
Interesting. So let's move on to the Brontes themselves. So for Americans who only know Jane Eyre or Wuthering Heights in passing, how do you explain the Bronte sisters' significance to someone who may be coming to them fresh?
Yeah, I mean, so the Bronte sisters, I guess, they're a big deal in English literature in the 19th century. And what's very special about them is the way that they published against basically all odds. So they had to use, they chose to use pseudonyms so that they could publish anonymously and no one would know who they were, but also that there was no prejudice against them being women writers. And the books, when they were released, were called coarse and were seen as very shocking. And, you know, people thought that women shouldn't be reading their books, even though women had written them. And there was so much speculation about the identities of them as writers. And they were, you know, three sisters living under one roof, and they'd all written these remarkable books that we still talk about today. And I think, and from a parsonage in Yorkshire, which I think is just what people don't really expect at all. So they kind of just broke a lot of barriers in their time and are still looked upon as, you know, some of the most famous women writers in history, I'd say.
I can add much more to that.
So Charlotte, Emily, and Anne are often lumped together, but they had each had very different literary voices. So how does the museum try to honor each of them individually?
Well, shall I start on that one? I think what's nice about the museum and with the Brontes is that each Bronte has, you know, their own kind of core fan group, and it's a bit like a band, you know, everyone has their favorite. And we try and keep it, I mean, from a programming point of view, we try and keep it relatively fair for each sister or family member. Although a year like this year, for example, when it's when we've got things like the Wuthering Heights film coming out, things are lent a little bit more towards Emily this year. So if there's something happening in a particular year, from 2017 to 2020, we were doing the 200 year anniversary of each Bronte sister. So each year was kind of having a focus on a different sister. So from an events point of view, we try and keep it, you know, equal for each one. So there's something for everyone. Yeah, I don't know, Mia, if you want to talk a bit more about.
I guess it's hard. I mean, we have, yeah, objects out from each of them, which I think is quite fairly evenly distributed around the museum. But also it's showing how collaboratively they work together, I think, and their writing was always a collaborative process. So it's also showing that they never really pitted each other. Themselves against each other either. It was very, they all work together basically.
No competition.
So is there a Bronte sister who tends to get overlooked that you feel deserves more attention?
Absolutely. I think we'd all agree that Anne definitely gets overlooked. And obviously there's like the other family members as well. Like, so you've got Branwell, there are two older sisters, Elizabeth and Mariah, who died very young. And we also look at Patrick as well. So we actually just did an event yesterday to celebrate Patrick's birthday, which was yesterday being St. Patrick's Day. I think Anne definitely gets overlooked, but I think that's just because Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights have very much kind of been part of pop culture. You know, there's more movies of them, there's more adaptations of them, there's pop songs written about them. So whereas Anne doesn't get that same exposure.
So you mentioned Patrick Bronte, their father. He's kind of often a footnote in the story of the Brontes. So what's the museum's take on his role in the family and the extraordinary output of his daughters?
I think it's interesting because it can be a bit mixed. I think sometimes people can come in with an idea that he wasn't a very nice man, but actually there's not much evidence for that. He did a lot in terms of trying to make the village better. And I think when you come into the house, there's a strong presence of Patrick there, because obviously it was a working parsonage. That was his office. So he has, there's Patrick Bronte's study as soon as you come into the house. You've got Patrick's bedroom as well. There's a story of him going and winding the clock, which you can still see. So he's got a strong presence in the house. I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, Mia.
Yeah, I think he was a big inspiration, I think, for the sisters to go on to become writers. It all started when he brought he bought a set of toy soldiers for Bramwell, and the four siblings kind of chose their own soldier, and that's how they began writing together. And he taught them the classics and, you know, gave them an education that they might not have had being girls going to school. So I think a lot of what they ended up writing and their interest in politics and stuff came from Patrick. Yeah.
So the parsonage is deeply tied to the landscape around it. Does the physical studying of Haworth factor into how visitors understand the works once they see the place?
I think it's a huge, there's a huge relation between the moors and the novels. And I think it is, like Sam said earlier, it is when you go for a walk on the moors, you do feel like you're stepping into one of the Bronte novels because it's featured so heavily in a lot of them, especially in Wuthering Heights. And it really helps to give context, I think, to the landscape that they're writing about. And you kind of understand more what they're saying and where these characters are situated. And I think it's something that Virginia Woolf also pointed out when she visited, that, you know, the interest in the Brontes and visiting the museum, would it be the same if we weren't in the location that we are in, which is Haworth and being surrounded by the moors? So I think they're all very strongly linked together, and I don't think you'd have one without the other.
Yeah, highly recommend if you ever get a chance to just go for a walk on the moors. Doesn't matter what the weather is, if it's pouring down with rain, if it's beautiful sunshine, just go for it because you get an amazing experience and it's so atmospheric.
So it sounds lovely. It sounds like the kind of place I'd like to visit. So we'll talk about visiting in a little bit, but first let's talk about Wuthering Heights. So there's an enormous conversation happening right now around Emerald Fennell's new Wuthering Heights film, which opened a few weeks ago. What's the mood been like at the museum? Is this kind of cultural moment exciting? Is it nerve-wracking? Is it both?
Definitely exciting. Yeah, we've had a lot of comments in our visitor book saying that people are visiting because they've watched the film. So there's definitely a buzz around Haworth and in the museum, because it's just great to be part of a pop culture moment.
I don't think we were kind of quite, I mean, we knew it was going to be a big film, but I don't think we expected it to be quite as big as it was. And seeing all the, you know, how much money went into all the premieres and the marketing, and we've just been wanting to get like a bit of everything just to remember it all, because, you know, how often does something like this come along where it's this level? So I think it has felt very exciting. It's felt quite surreal. I think like next year we'll probably be thinking, did that really happen? Like it just has felt such like a whirlwind, but a really exciting one, and it's been great to be part of it.
Have both of you seen the new film?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A few times.
Fortunately, I haven't. I have not seen it. I did not get a chance to see it before it left theaters, so I'm waiting for it to get on demand.
You listened to the Charlie XCX album?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, you need to listen, because that was like the other part of it, which is great. Was that there was a whole album with it too?
Okay, yeah. I'll have to do that.
Yeah,
Emerald Fennell has been upfront that her version is essentially what she thought Wuthering Heights was about when she read it as a teenager, sort of a personal interpretation rather than a faithful adaptation. How do you guys think that worked out in the end? Do you think it's a good adaptation? Do you think that it degrades the Brontes' work, or do you think it's, hey, it's great?
I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the film. I think, you know, any artist is allowed to create their own version. And I think everyone who reads the book has their own interpretation of what they think the story is. And so it's always great to see different creatives' ideas and see it brought to life in a new way that feels very fresh. It's exciting.
I think it's funny because we've talked before about how with the Brontes you can always compare them a bit to Shakespeare, and you look at how Shakespeare's work is often reinterpreted in different settings or different time periods, and I think that's what why the Bronte's work is so good, is because it's very timeless. There's a lot of timeless themes in there. So you can really draw on certain elements or focus on certain topics or themes within the novels. And I think that's what keeps it fresh, and that's what makes it exciting. And it's nice to have something which is completely different from all the other adaptations, because there are so many as well. So yeah, it's been really exciting with it coming out. There's something else I was going to mention then. Adaptation. No, it's gone. But yeah, it was, it has been, exciting. And I think, oh, that's what I was going to say. And because if you look at the novel as well, of Wuthering Heights, where you've got most of it's told by Nellie Dean. And Nellie Dean, who works for in the house that Heathcliff and Catherine live in. So you're hearing everything from her rather than actually following Heathcliff and Catherine around. So really, that actually gives you a lot of, you know, space to make your own creative interpretation of what was happening when we weren't with Heathcliff and Catherine. So, you know, it's nice to have something which is a bit different, and it certainly appealed to a lot of people, and I think it's going to bring a lot of people to the museum. It already is bringing a lot of people to the museum. So that is nice.
So Wuthering Heights is often misread as a straightforward romance when it's really something much darker and more morally complex. Does the museum do work to help people understand what the book is actually about?
Yeah. So I think the museum definitely focuses more on the Brontes' lives and what their lives were like living in Haworth. But I think for us, we never really want to tell visitors and people what to think. We want people to read the books and make their own minds up about different themes and stuff. So I think we're always up for having conversations in the museum about the books. I think that's probably about it.
Yeah, I would agree with what Mia said on that.
So critics have noted that controversy about Wuthering Heights is nothing new. Even the original 1847 novel was attacked for its vulgar depravity by contemporary reviewers. So does this long history of provocation feel like it's just part of Emily Bronte's legacy and expected whenever there's a new adaptation?
Yeah, I think it should be quite pleased that it's causing controversy still.
Yeah.
So has the film driven more visitors and interest to the museum? Does the big adaptations give you guys a boost? I know Jane Eyre was recently done a few years ago.
Yeah. I think the adaptations are a gateway for a lot of people to the Brontes. A lot of people will see a film version before they read the book, which is great as well. It brings people to the Brontes and their life and their stories and their novels. I think that's always great. And it's been announced recently that they're looking at adapting Jane Eyre again, which is, again, very exciting. So we'll brace ourselves for potentially a Jane Eyre-themed year next year.
Is it going to be a film or another TV drama?
Is it a miniseries? Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah, they've said it's a TV adaptation, so I'm presuming it's a series. They've not clarified yet, really.
We'll have to have you on again when it's later. Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre is probably my favorite. I like Wuthering Heights, but I'm digressing here, but I did a post-colonial literature course in university, and we read Jane Eyre, but then we also read Wyatt Sargasso Sea, and then we also watched the drama, and so like we got really immersed in Jane Eyre. I have a soft spot for Jane Eyre.
Do you have a favorite adaptation of Jane Eyre?
The Timothy Dalton version back in the olden days.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one.
That's a good one. And then they did a Wide Sargasso Sea adaptation a few years ago with Hayley Atwell, which was really good. I really enjoyed that. So So for visiting Haworth, practicality sake, like you guys, Haworth, I keep saying it wrong. I'm going to get comments because I like no matter how hard I try, I always pronounce these places wrong. Because
it's all right.
even, no offense, but even British people can't agree on how a place name is pronounced. So
no, it's true. It's true.
So is it Shrewsbury? Shrewsbury? I mean,
yeah. We like to confuse ourselves.
It gives you endless possibilities for debate, right?
And yeah.
Yeah. So for an American Anglophile planning their first visit to the parsonage, what should they know before they go? What's the experience like, and how do they get there? Because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Getting there is always the hard bit. No, I mean, the village itself is nice. I think if you're coming, you're coming for a day out. So, you know, visit the museum, go down Main Street and like visit the shops and the cafes, and then go for a hike on the moors. Or there's like the Worth Valley Railway line, which has like the steam train as well. So it's very much stepping back in time. And then the museum itself, if you're visiting, I think, you know, it does get quite busy in Haworth because it is a tourist destination in itself, and the museums can be quite small, like the rooms and stuff. So I think it's, you know, being prepared that it could be quite busy, but it's always nice, and there's lots of staff and volunteers dotted around the museum. They're always up for having chats about the Brontes and the books. So yeah,
want to wear good walking shoes.
Yeah, good walking shoes.
Yeah,
and I would say as well, in terms of getting there as well, I mean, if you're coming, say if you were in London, I mean, you can get a direct train to Leeds and then from Leeds to Keighley, and then you'd probably have to get a taxi or potentially the steam train from Keighley to Haworth. So it's not too difficult, but yeah, it's not impossible, but you could do it in a day. Well, actually, no, you probably couldn't do it a day from London. Ignore me what I'm saying. But if you're staying overnight, you could get there easily.
Yeah. You had me at steam trained. So,
yeah. The steam train's lovely.
Visit Yorkshire and stay a few days and then visit Haworth, because then you've got all the time in the world and you're not in a rush. Because
that's it.
Yeah.
Who wants to go to the middle of the Yorkshire Moors and then go right back to London?
Exactly.
No, yeah, go to York.
Also, I was going to say, I don't know if you know. Yeah, York as well. But going back to the railway as well, that's where, I don't know if you know the film The Railway Children. It's kind of like a very like iconic British film. But that was all filmed on the railway. It goes between Keighley and Oxenhope and includes Haworth and Oakworth. And that was all filmed on that railway as well. And they used the parsonage in that film too.
Like I said, you just keep selling it for me. So is there any time of year you'd recommend visiting Haworth? What else should people see while they're there other than the steam train?
I mean, August is always a good time because the heather's out, so it looks beautiful out on the moors.
All purple.
And it is all purple. It's beautiful. I would say, like Mia was saying then, York's a really good city to go to. Manchester, Leeds, it's kind of like you're in the middle of these great cities that, you know, they're not too far away that you can go and explore. But then if you want to have just like a nice rural experience, then stay in Haworth, really.
Yeah.
It's a very also Instagrammable village.
Yeah, definitely Instagrammable. Mm. And people like coming in autumn time, I think, as well. It gets quite foggy and misty, and it's very atmospheric. It feels very gothic, I think, when it gets to like autumn time. So, yeah.
Well, if you're going to have a gothic experience, then after Haworth, go on to Whitby and do the literary things there as well.
Yeah.
Exactly,
has to be done.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yorkshire's the best place if you want like literary gothic experience.
So beyond the movie, I mean, what's coming up at the museum? Any exhibitions, special events, or any news you'd like to share with our visitors to make them plan their trips around coming?
Well, in the next in the coming months, we've got quite a few exciting events and workshops happening. We've got one which is very much in theme with the film. We're looking at hair jewelry, which obviously was a big part of the premiere as well in London, and making Victorian hair jewelry, not from real hair, I don't think. And And I'm trying to think what else we have coming up. Oh yeah, and we've got a live event happening in Easter as well with Guillaume Soldevila, which is going to be really exciting. He's put music, the Bronte's poetry to music, which is really beautiful. You can listen to that online as well. So yeah, we've got a few nice events coming up.
Sounds good. Well, what a wonderful journey into the world of the Brontes this has been. Thank you so much for joining us on the Angletopia podcast, me and Sam. We'll link to the Bronte Parsonage Museum's website and the Behind the Glass podcast in the show notes. If you haven't listened to their show yet, it's an absolute treat and genuinely brilliant way to experience a museum collection through audio. And if you're planning a trip to Yorkshire, a visit to Haworth has to be on your list. So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, or leave a comment. It really helps others discover the podcast. And if you love what we do at Angletopia, consider joining the Friends of Angletopia Club, where you'll get early access to new episodes and connect with fellow Anglophiles in our private online community. Plus, you'll find exclusive travel guides and tips that you won't get anywhere else. Whether you've been a devoted Bronte reader your whole life or new to the Wuthering Heights film, has just sparked your curiosity, and the story of the three sisters and the Yorkshire Moors who changed literature forever is one that never gets old. So join us next time as we continue our journey through the people, places, and stories that make British culture so endlessly captivating. Until then, happy travels, and perhaps pick up a copy of Wuthering Heights along the way. So thank you, me and Sam, for your time. This has been lovely.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.